Sometimes you might feel trapped between the right and the left. No one listens when you say taxation is theft.
But there's a place where people know harsh government brings tears. So grab some glue and adrenochrome. Let's make the timeline weird. Friends against government. Friends against government.
Okay, hold on now, Carr. So it's Fagcast Live. You're on an internet Fagcast connection Live. For this. You're on an internet connection streaming the game, and you have a
storm
overhead.
Well, my internet is not the issue here, Bird, because I have fiber.
No,
what the issue
is. Really, it could be the issue here. Look, I swear to God, Carr, if you cut out on our second live episode, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah, well, it could happen.
Yeah, well, then we'll know fiber is to blame. So, the first guest that we have on Fagcast Live, Trent, our boy, we tried to do this once before, and, you know, let me not eat my own words here. I'm gonna check how I sound, because otherwise the gain is going to make me kill myself.
Yeah, you sound good.
Okay, I sound delightful. Our audience is going to be happy about that. Shout out to Anna Adams in the chat. What's good, Anna? Secret Clubhouse member extraordinaire. Who else do we have in the chat? Shout yourselves out.
Oh, Mark Claire. Mark
joining us. No, that's not Mark. That's a fake Mark.
That's Mark the Shark.
Yeah, Mark doesn't have the old keys into there. I don't know who made the Mark Claire account, but whoever it is, they're doing a good job. What do we have today? We got a... So as I said, a little background, and then Carr, I'm going to test you on something.
You're going to test me on something?
I'm going to test you on something, so you better be ready for that. So, our background, Trent, if I may, we got into a discussion about some strange, for lack of a better term, Buddhist cult, some sort of cultic sect of fake Buddhism, probably, we talked all about that. We talked about, you know, what they do, what they believe, all those things. And then I goofed it on the gain control of my mic, and so it sounded like I was, like, shouting into a tin can. So we're going to try that one again. We're going to steam forward. But we're going to do that. Again, Trent, your patience, please. Carr Campit, I'm going to test you a little bit, okay? I'm going to give you some tests.
Okay. All right. Series of tests.
One test. I want you to... So that our audience members can go into this with, you know, as much confusion as you probably have on the subject, I want you to give me a brief summary of what you remember from our last recording. A brief summary. Do you remember the name of what we were talking about, even? Do you remember... Look at his eyes open. Look at him. Tell me everything that you remember. You don't have to remember anything in particular, but I want our listeners... To kind of get into a state of confusion for this one. So, Carr, tell me what you remember.
First of all, that was like 2 weeks ago.
Was it 2 weeks ago? Well, now it's live. So.
It was a while ago.
It wasn't
we were talking
that
about
long.
And stuff. I don't know. It was mostly cults, right?
It was mostly cults. Come on. Your memory can't be this bad. What do you remember about it? What do you remember about it, even? You don't have to remember it. What sticks out? He does so many.
I don't
look
know.
At him.
I don't know what you're driving at.
I want to know what you remember. We did a whole hour of education on this. It would be like, you know what it is? This kind of dumb cult shit. Like, I listen to it and I'm like, It would be like, Carr, if we did an episode, which, by the way, great episode. Great solo episode. It would be like if I did an episode with J.W. Weatherman for an hour. 2 weeks later, you were asking me, so what do you remember from that episode? And I go, nothing. You'd go, what? Why?
All right. So, okay. So here's the thing, right? I place myself in a mindset to podcast. That mindset necessitates that I just kind of memory dump a lot. right? I gotta be, on my toes. I gotta juke this way. I gotta juke that way. I gotta come up with a word that rhymes, maybe, perhaps for some reason.
Yeah, you do that a lot. Yeah.
So that's what makes me so lively is that I'm dumping the RAM every 5, 10, 15 seconds. Ask me what, I don't know. I have no idea. So then I go back and I listen to the finished product and I'm like, oh yes, now I remember what we were talking about. And it sticks in my mind. But I can't remember every, you know, I'm in the zone. I'm flowing.
Well, you did you should be a politician. That was fantastic.
Wasn't that good?
That was great.
I won't remember it.
Trent, he's an embarrassment. I'm sorry for my co-hosts here. This is just a disgrace. Let's talk about Ekinkar, Trent. Let's do
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Now, Ekinkar is not something that our co-host here does, but it is a Buddhist cult, as far as I remember, and they got a lot of weird things going on. Now, Trent, I'm glad we did this once before, because it is confusing. Everything you were telling, I was in a deep state of confusion for several days afterwards, but I've retained a little bit. I remember some of the key points, and I remember some of the key names. And that's really about it. So, Trent, you have the floor here. Start us off, and we'll derail you within a few minutes. So,
sure,
we'll see how that goes.
And, in fact, actually, I'm just going to take it. I'm going to take the wheel here.
Well, I asked you to take the wheel, and you were like, well, my memory dump, you know?
Oh, well, see, I forgot you said that. But
Right.
He just pulled up the list of sources that I sent you guys, and he has something open right now.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, actually, in fact, Ekinkar was founded in 1962 by Paul Twitchell. He's going to be like, shut up.
Bird, that was so close to correct, I can't believe it.
No, I paid it. I listened, man. I'm into cults, dude.
Here we go.
I'm into cults. I'm into cults here. Again, you tell Car Camp it's something about something that happened on a security protocol for a coin that no one's ever heard of, and he'll remember it like it's his mom's name, but he won't remember cults because he's not 22 years old anymore. And I wish I podcasted with that guy because that guy was nuts.
that guy's in the past, safely away,
locked away somewhere in time.
Locked away, yeah.
All right, you got the floor here, Trent. Start us off, and you know, we'll go from there.
All right, so it's Ekinkar. I'm hesitant to call it a cult almost, maybe because I've done so much research that it might just be a religion in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, I like to refer to it as either white guy Buddhism or Scientology light.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
That's how I like to think about it. It was founded in 1965 by Paul Twitchell, studied under a couple of masters in India, or a couple of Indian masters, I think in Tibet, actually.
I was going to say, a couple of Indian masters in Soho.
In India.
In quotes, India TM. It's some guy's India. Basement in California. Yeah, he's a well-trained guy, this Paul Twitchell fella.
Yeah, so he founded the group in 1965, and he died in 1971. He was followed up by a guy named Darwin Gross, who... yeah, that's a real name, apparently.
You didn't tell us
Darwin Gross?
Yeah, you didn't tell us that one last time. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
No, I did, but he's just that forgettable.
Bird.
He's
man,
just that forgettable.
He's a
because
guy.
I know nothing about Darwin Gross except the fact that he was the living Eckmaster from 1971 to 1981.
And we'll get to that. We'll explain the living Eckmaster in a moment.
we'll touch that. We're going to try to not get too deep in the weeds on that side this time.
Yeah, I figured.
We're going to keep it light. So in 1981, he suddenly stopped becoming the eternal leader of this group. I think he died in 2005, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. So
1981, he just was no longer in charge of this group. And Harold Klemp, which is also apparently a real name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He took over, and he is still the leader. And he actually he moved the spiritual home of Ekinkar, fun fact, to Chanhassen, Minnesota, about a 4 mile up the road from Paisley Park, which is like Prince's big compound that he lived out of.
Right, right, right. Which, are we going to get into that? Do you have any information on whether or not he was an Eckencourt guy, Prince? Do we know anything about that?
I don't think so.
I mean, if anybody was talking in the spirit language, it was Prince. It was Prince.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that clearly these guys are bullshit because Prince wasn't part of it.
That's
so
true. If Prince is not a part of your thing, you're bullshit until he is. Well, were. Now we got to find a new guy, the living Prince master.
The new Prince.
The new Prince.
We need
the
to crown prince. A new Prince.
The crowned Prince. Oh, man. All right, let's see here. So we got Twitchell. Right. We've established the line of leadership here. We got Twitchell, Klemp.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And what was his name? Gross? And yeah, and Darwin Gross.
Yep.
Are the leaders Darwin. Of the, or are, or were a succession of leaders of this group called Eckencourt. What the hell is Eckencourt?
All right. So, it can also be referred to as, quote, the religion of light and sound of God.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah, that right. sounds good.
Mm-hmm. You want that in your life, Carr. Somebody tells you, you know, I got the religion of light and sound of God. You go, you know, okay, I could be into that.
I go, yes, tell me more.
Yeah, right. You go, Wait, yes, you tell me more.
I'm going to tell you more, Connor, and you're going to love it.
All right. I like that. I like that attitude. That's
Eckencourt, they boast quite a bit, actually. They're pretty excited that apparently Eckencourt can be translated to co-worker with God.
Oh.
Co-worker with God. There's something sinister about that, but yeah, sure. Let's go ahead.
They like to say that a lot for some reason.
Co-worker with God.
So
I don't know how to feel about that. That's really strange.
I'm digging deep in the bag of the English language, and I don't know what word to use next. So just keep going, I guess. I don't really have anything to say.
That's the response to that, I feel.
Hold on. There's got to be something. We've got to have a good joke about this, huh?
Yeah,
who
you're
are we
right.
if we can't come up with a joke about
co-worker
with
God? Yeah, it's just weird because you ain't really doing shit, are you? It's really all God, right? Yeah. It's like, right. what are you working on there? Oh, you know, I got a Word doc. It's like, thanks, Fred, for being a coworker at God's company. I made sound today.
Decent enough attempt, Bert.
Yeah, I tried.
That was good. I think
Thanks.
That's enough to move
I got
on.
It.
Thanks.
I got it. No, okay. This gave me a new perspective on what the rest of what I'm going to say is.
Okay.
Which is, part of what I'm going to present to you is what happens when you become a disgruntled co-worker with God.
Fair enough. That's a good way to introduce that.
I sincerely hope that Trent just like basically like catfished us into him selling us this religion. Like he recently got hurt and he's trying to grow it.
I've thought for a while that Trent actually is a member of Eckencourt and he's trying to get us in. Okay. I have thought of that. I've considered it.
All right. So now we're going to talk about a little two-letter word that sounds like three letters called Hugh.
It's spelled
Hugh. Yep. So they chant it.
This was a big hit. This was a big hit
like
in our last recording.
Thing. But like they'll have these meetings where there'll be hundreds of people in a room just going Hugh for like half an hour.
Jesus.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and that's like the thing that gets you like to speak to God. What is it? How does it work?
To co-work with God.
Yeah.
That moves you one cubicle closer.
God is looking at you like, what are you doing down there? Yeah.
And he's like, all right, well, move right in. Come here. Here's a desk chair.
If you're gonna shout,
here's some papers. I you can help me with these spreadsheets, I guess.
What if these guys actually had a line to God, but it's because they annoyed him by yelling Hugh in his face all day?
That's
tell you what, respect.
There's an old Mesopotamian myth about the gods, about the flood, And it's that people were being too noisy, and so they flooded the world to try and kill all of us. So, yeah, maybe the Hue thing, maybe you're onto something, Trent. Maybe this is the stuff of legend here.
Can I tell you a joke that I was about to tell?
Oh, God.
I'm always down for a backtrack joke.
Oh, God. On Fadcast Live, you're going to tell a joke like this?
The moment is past.
The moment's past. All right, so we're chanting Hue. We're chanting Hue. We're communing with God. We're chanting Hue. In an Ekinkar. Where do they do this, by the way, Trent? What, like, they have a facility where they pray together? What's the deal with that?
They have multiple facilities around the world.
Oh boy. That's how you know there's a problem, right?
Well distributed. It's very good.
They kind of grew to a point, and then they've been on the fall since like the 90s.
Okay. All right.
They still have, so like they have a big, so the reason I know about this group is because I grew up nearby, like 15 minutes away. So last time I was home, I actually snapped a picture in front of the spiritual home of Ekinkar, like the building. And it's just a piece of shit building. Like, it doesn't look nice at all.
No, it doesn't look spiritual. It doesn't look much like a Hue. It doesn't look like much like the sound of God. No, it doesn't look right.
What was the Hue of the building?
You ever been to an industrial park?
I have.
It was like a brutalist. Color. Yeah, it was like
an industrial Hue.
Weird brutalist building. Yeah, it's weird. We could talk about the theology for like 2 seconds, Trent, if you wanna figure out what the how they commune with God. Is it something like
I'm so scared of getting too deep.
Yeah, I understand.
It's deep very quickly.
Yeah, it gets real deep real quick. So what is it? You're meditating and you hear noises or something like that? How does it work? You hue enough that you draw all of the oxygen out of the blood in your brain and you pass out, right? This is how it goes.
You go to sleep.
Yeah, you go. I'm making finger quotes here. You go to sleep.
Forever.
Knocked you out, probably.
Yeah, the hewing. Yeah. and you start knocking out.
You into the void long enough, the void begins to hew back at you.
Which is essentially what happens in this religion. You start hearing noises and stuff like that. And guys, it's a lot like Scientology. They got all the books locked up behind a paywall or something. You know how it is. You know.
Yeah. So, I kind of want to steer away from that and go into the life of Paul Twitchell, the founder.
Let's do it.
Well, too fucking bad because we're staying on it.
No. Let's
evolve again, Carr.
let's do that. Let's do Twitchell because honestly, listeners. Everybody knows what a cult looks like, right? Everybody knows how they work. Everybody knows they all get their weird... Whatever the case may be.
And everybody who knows what a non-cult looks like.
It looks like Childeberg, right? It looks a lot like Childeberg.
A noted non-cult.
So what you want to do is... You don't want to learn about Childeberg, right? You don't want to learn about the cult.
It's boring. Not a cult.
Yeah, you're right. You want to learn about the guys who made the cult, you know? You want to learn about why Carr Campit and Jake from Tasting Anarchy made this cult. You want to know why they're taking your money? You know, where is it going? Is it going to Israel? Where is the money going? Where is it? Where has our money gone? So, Trent, tell us where the Childeberg... I mean, Ekinkar. I really want to know where the Childeberg money has gone. I mean, Ekinkar. Tell us about Paul
Twitchell.
He's
making errors right now.
Right.
People are going to be angrily emailing, do you guys donate the Childeberg money to Israel?
Seriously in the chat.
you guys donate the money to the Israeli Defense Force? What?
Bert, I'm going to be honest with you. Over that explanation of what we were about to go into, I was on board, but I kind of wanted to jump off the train at a point.
Okay.
I'm looking more at just like, what kind of person starts this group? Because what I think happened here at the end of the day is that this is a guy who tried to start a cult that he died too early to really get into the cult shit. And then it petered off to, like, some weird grifter bullshit.
Oh, okay. Okay, let's do that. Yeah.
Okay, so let's do that. So this is the guy that started Paul Twitchell. So I got most of this from an article written by David Lane. But if you look him up, you should look for David Christopher Lane, because if you just Google David Lane, it's like a white supremacist, terrorist.
Yeah, it's yeah, David Lane.
And I did look back to make sure that they're not the same person. I made sure they used it.
When you first told me that, I had to actually look and make sure. That would have made it a lot. That would have made it really strangely interesting.
So this is the guy who broke the lid open on Ekinkar, but he has a really good summary. So this first part is, we don't know when Paul Twitchell was born exactly.
Nice.
It was 1922, 1912, 1909, or 1908.
Oh, that's a wild spread.
I found a source that apparently found where these different numbers come from. So apparently, and by the way, I would not be willing to bet $5 on any given source for this whole episode.
Okay.
So.
Well, prepare for a punch in the dick.
This is all for funsy research.
Yeah, and clout. Let's not forget that.
Clout, absolutely clout. So 1922 is apparently the year that was on his second wife's birth certificate. Several friends apparently said this, and his death certificate, I guess. But if you were a cult leader, would you not lie to your first wife about the year you were born? So I feel like I can rule that out.
Okay. All right.
1912 is apparently what his first marriage certificate said. 1909 is in the Twitchell family genealogy, which I was able to find on the internet.
Oh, Jesus. You looked for the genealogy?
Well, no, it's not that hard to find when you find the guy who said it and links it. So. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And 1908 is apparently what's recorded by the government, but I don't trust the government, so it's probably that one's wrong too.
Okay.
I don't know when this guy was born, so there's like that. It's weird right up front.
Okay.
There's not a lot as his childhood. He's the youngest of four, born in Kentucky. As a young man, he worked for the Courier Journal magazine, and apparently over his time there, wrote 1,800 stories in 3 years.
Oh, that's not suspicious at all, huh?
That's pretty, yeah.
So do we know about another story writer who founded a, quote, religion? Do we know about any of those?
No. It's weird, right? That's super weird. So at some point, he joined the Navy. When he got out, he moved to New York in 1942. Oh, did nothing in New York at all. He basically failed as a writer in New York.
Oh, another a failed writer who writes a lot of short stories and founds a religion.
You know,
wait a minute.
Could it be?
Well, I guess Hubbard is not a failed writer at all, is he? He's actually a very successful writer. I guess.
True. Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, so in 45, he moved to D.C. with his first wife and joined... Hold up. Let me make sure I say this right. It's a lot of words. The Self-Revelation Church of Absolute Monism.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So he joined this group. Basically, it's yoga. It's a yoga group. It's like a religion.
Hey, man, you want to join our monistic?
Yeah.
How do you sell that? Let's do some stretches. You know,
here's where we get a little weird again.
Are you drinking Yingling?
Yes, I am.
Oh, man.
Did you get that? Have you gotten the Yingling Hershey yet?
No, they don't distribute it here.
It's coming to a place near me on the 17th. I'm picking some up. I'm going to pick some up.
Bird, yeah. I will
spend money if you make some of that. I know. Well, we got to keep it on the low because I don't quite know the legalities of that, and so let's keep it hush for now.
I know about beer trading a little bit, so I know what you can do.
Okay, cool. We'll figure that out. We'll Hershey it up, Cor.
We'll talk about that in the secret group chat later.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll talk in the clubhouse later about that.
Goddamn son of a bitch.
You still haven't found it, have you, Cor?
Am I in it?
Honestly, I haven't even found it, Bird. I'm just making jokes.
We'll get you in it.
I'm just drinking dangling roasting Cor.
Yeah, we'll get you in it. All right, so this suspiciousness from this the Paul Twitchell front.
So this weird yoga group. So here's where it gets weird. In 1950, 5 years after, they moved to a church compound, live on your own as a group, communistically compound.
Oh, wow.
Like yoga shit. Huh. Now, 5 years after that, Paul was kicked out for, quote, personal misconduct.
No.
And his wife separated him in 1960, five years later.
He was banging one of the yoga dudes.
Absolutely, for sure.
Hell yeah, baby.
He got divorced and kicked out of the yoga club because he was banging one of the yoga people. Jesus.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. That's going to cut Cor's like, got to join a yoga group.
Got me perked up. Need to start doing more yoga.
I hate that description of it as boys. Perked up. I hate that it's called perked up. That's not good.
All right. I'm going to freak you guys out a little bit here. Fun fact. In the late 50s, Paul became a staff member of the Church of Scientology.
Oh, okay. All right. Here we go.
Now, this is my theory based on research I did. Mm-hmm. So I think what drew him in was in 1956 is the year that Scientology got the tax break, like the religious tax exemption.
Okay.
So I think that tied with Dianetics kind of drew him in. And I was unable to find it, but I looked for the numbers, like the rough amount of people in Scientology at the time, because I can't imagine it was all that big. Like, I could see this guy rubbing shoulders with L. Ron Hubbard at some point.
Oh, man.
I'd be rubbing a little bit more than that, if you know what I mean.
And he was at the compound. It was him and Ron. It was him and Ron. They were kissing up at the compound.
Stretched
getting
it out.
Getting loose at the yoga compound.
Later, babe. I'm gonna go get loose with my boyfriends.
Dude, in the 30s, it had a different connotation. It meant something different to go out with your boyfriends. That is ridiculous. All right, so keep going, Trent.
All right, so after that, after he left Scientology, which, by the way, he immediately denied any connection to Scientology for the rest of his life.
They're a bunch of grifters, guys. We can't do that.
They're a bunch of really hot grifters.
Yeah. he keeps talking about all his boyfriends.
can't quit.
All right. So then he went and he studied under two guru people. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where I was talking about. A couple of probably, almost definitely. I mean, this was like he was in Tibet studying under a couple of guys for 8 years.
Yeah, he's the guy. He was born around the 20s, apparently.
14.
Most likely before.
He was born around or before the 20s, and he's been somebody, some religious, pseudo-religious even, person's understudy for his whole life so far. Do you haven't, like, said one time where he struck out on his own?
So, he was a writer, and then he joined the Navy, and when he got out of the Navy, he went head first into the religious stuff.
Wait, when does MK Ultra start?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be involved, right? Wait, was Ron Hubbard involved with MK Ultra?
I'll be looking that up. Trent, you could keep going. I'll figure that out.
I'm not sure if I've ever read that. I mean, who knows, obviously, but...
Let's see here.
If we say it enough times, it'll become true on the internet.
That's good. This is a good platform as any to start that rumor.
Might as well.
Elrond may have just been before MK Ultra. Like, He was doing that shit. Well, I don't know. I guess he
started before, but not.
Yeah.
Probably like 8 years before, I would guess.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know when MKUltra officially kicked off, and God knows it was probably running before that, but I think L. Ron was probably becoming prominent prior to him.
Well, no, he was pushing people off of boats for disagreeing with him and shit in the early years.
Yeah. Well, that's when he was dicking around down in the Caribbean on his boat, right? Isn't that what he eventually, like, just sailed off one day? Like, isn't that how he disappeared?
Yeah, he was, like, wanted for something, and he just left
on his boat. That's maritime. All
right. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to get into... I actually want to read just a chunk of this, because this is going to give you... This is just the best chunk where it starts getting weird in the article that I read about this, and it sums it up better than I could.
Okay.
So, quote, Twitchell married his second wife, Gail Adkinson, in San Francisco in 1964. Shortly afterwards, Twitchell claimed a 500-year-old Tibetan monk, Rebzar Tars, appeared to him and instructed him to move to San Diego. Twitchell was living in Point Loma in 1965 when he started teaching workshops and selling booklets on how to leave your body. On October 22nd, 1965, Twitchell claimed to have received the Rod of Power from Rebzar Tars, the 971st living Ekmaster. Ekankar, the ancient science of soul travel, was officially founded.
Wow. Incredible.
Incredible. So he got butt-fucked by this 500-year-old monk.
Oh, wow. In San Fran.
Of course. He received the Rod of Power.
Oh, right. He got his rod.
Yep. So, and then he started advertising in magazines, which is, of course, where you go to advertise with the Rod of Power.
Right. Well, he had some connections in magazines, apparently. I guess. Even though he sucked.
So listen to some of the claims he was making in the magazines. He was claiming that he sleeps for 4 hours a night. He reads 5,000 words a minute.
Oh my God.
Sorry, what? 5,000 words a minute?
That's what he was putting out in these magazine advertisements.
Wait, is that 5,000?
No, that's like
reading or writing?
Words. That's a long paper.
That'd be funny if he claimed that he was inventing 5,000 words per minute.
Yeah, the average person reads between 38... The average person reads, on average, between 65 and 75 words per minute. Jesus. That seems...
Reads?
Yeah, reads.
Yeah. So he is a liar face. He also boasted, quote, the ability to be all places at the same time. No,
that
this
can't
is
be right. Playing... 60 words per minute?
I'm sorry. I was looking at typed. The average adult reading speed is between 200 and 300 words per minute. So this guy is reading 5,000. Yeah. 5,000 words per minute.
Yeah, which is still insane. I'm just...
He's bulking. Yeah. He's bulking, for sure.
Also, yeah, quote, the ability to be in all places at the same time.
Sure.
So, that, you know what, that, unfortunately, that translates to the inability not to be somewhere, which could be a real problem when you think about it.
Yeah. Sir, do you have an alibi for this murder? Well, no, because I'm technically everywhere all the time.
Yes and no.
So my alibi place is there.
He is responsible for every murder.
Yes. Or at least present at it.
Yeah, exactly. He should just be in a cage telling about every murder.
So this guy is nuts, from what I'm gathering. Or no, he's a liar. I don't know if he's nuts.
My personal opinion is that he learned about these things from these various teachers. He took a little bit from all these people. This is what he took from L. Ron Hubbard, was writing a lot, making wild claims about what you can do to, like, build this fucking thing up and just grift your way into it. Right,
yeah, right.
And here's the crazy thing, is it worked pretty well.
Okay.
But not because of Twitchell. Actually, this David Lane, non-white supremacist guy, his insight is that it's his wife, Gail, his second wife, Gail, who was like, she was apparently a great bookkeeper and she was awesome with numbers. And she just like was marketing, great at marketing. So he basically was just doing the holy text. I believe he was writing at this time, the holy text of Ekinkar, real nonsensical. Like it's okay. Yeah, it's all over. It's fucking crazy.
So you downloaded the book. You managed to get this book?
Yeah, I found two free copies online, and I can explain why one of them was free later if we.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Now, here's where we find out about why David Lane has this article about Paul Twitchell.
Right.
He has this information. It's because as an undergrad, so by the way, this man is a like surfer dude, like he's a surfer bro in California.
Lane or Twitchell?
That's who David Lane is at his core.
Okay.
And as an undergraduate doing a paper, he looked into Ekinkar because his roommate was in it.
Oh.
So he found, and he went through, basically combed through and found in that base text, that you know, big fat book I couldn't read.
Right.
He found entire chapters plagiarized, like including typing errors and shit.
Oh.
Like entire things just ripped out from the writings of the people who he studied under in Tibet. This time he was denying all connection to. So he ripped off all these motherfuckers' writings and built his own religion in California.
Right.
Radical.
That was the controversy here, is the guy is an absolute fraud, least in that much, right? Or a terrible writer. So it really does bring into question, like, the guy wrote that much. How much of it did he actually write? It makes me wonder.
So David Lane puts in another cool insight about this. He thinks that the reason that he plagiarized a lot is because his second wife was such a productive asset to grow in this thing that he wasn't able to keep up in his writing.
Oh.
To like make this, that like it was growing faster than he thought it was gonna. So he was like, oh fuck, man, I gotta write more. And he's like, I'll just take this shit.
So let me ask you a question. So Ekinkar is founded and operating at this point when he's plagiarizing? Like it's active? Or
I believe so. Okay. I'm not sure if he came out with that book first or not. He came out with it in the same year, I believe.
So what is he mostly doing writings of, is what I'm wondering. Like, what is he writing in order to keep up with his wife? What is he writing? Or stealing? What was the content?
He has a lot of books. Most of them are actually like original, but like most of the base text of the religion is plagiarized.
And what is he? Is he a fiction writer, a reporter? Like, what does he mostly write books on? Do you know?
I believe he was a fiction writer. I haven't found any of his writings.
Okay.
Honestly, I haven't looked as hard as I could have. I should have looked harder.
Let me see if I can dig something up, and you could continue.
So, well, here's a cool thing. So, David Lane's roommate, who I mentioned, is now like a very, very, like, highly regarded physicist.
Oh, really?
He holds, like, I can't remember what school. Jim Peebles.
Jim Peebles? Okay, Jim Peebles.
Whenever we talk about cults, it's just a bunch of names that just
they're wild, made up. Wild-ass names. He was a Pulp Fiction writer, so he was a little story, little story writer is mostly what he wrote. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Holy moly, the guy has a lot of books.
That's what we spent an hour and a half on last week.
Yeah.
The ridiculous bullshit that he was writing / stealing.
That's right, because we looked at the list of, like, you know, spiritual dimensions, and we got into, like, it was all very strange, which You know, listeners, if you're curious, looking up the spiritual dimensions of Ekin Car, not hard to find. It's a big chart full of colors and words and letters. Very interesting.
All right. Yeah, it's fucking weird.
It's weird.
So, 1971, Paul translated Ekin Car, or Ekists, as they're called, which is a fun word to say.
Wait, Ekists?
Why did they choose this name? This name sucks.
Because it does. Means co-worker with God.
Because the name of the religion is Ekin Car, and it's hard to make a cool name out of that.
But why is the name of the religion Ekin Car?
Because you're a co-worker with God.
Exactly.
Okay, so it was made...
Yeah, it was made bad. Probably. Yeah, it was made bad.
Well, they claim that this is the oldest religion in the world, and all religions are based on it, so...
Sure.
Yeah. 1971, when he translated... That means that he just gets to live in the other worlds in the chart that Bird mentioned.
Right, right. Yep.
So they think that he's still alive and you can talk to him.
Right.
If you can hew enough.
Yeah, if you're able to hew.
Maybe we should all just give it a try at the end of this podcast and see if we can summon him.
I think that's a good idea, Carr. Maybe we'll get in a little circle and we'll hew and we'll see if Paul Twitchell comes up.
How goddamn spooky would this podcast be if we summoned Paul Twitchell?
I would leave. I would hang up. I would be like, not interested. Sorry.
I would continue it.
It'd go solo. Solo episode. Yeah.
I would join.
Yeah, I'm in. Hey, man. Hey, Paul. That was weird, right?
So right, you guys will hear an alternate story of Paul Twitchell's life from a court document.
Oh, yep. I love a court document.
I love me a good, you know that about Bird. He loves a good court document.
I love a good
we all know
little court slander. I love it.
Guys, I gotta grab some water real quick. Has anybody noticed that the flow state gives you very dry mouth often?
I wonder why. I wonder what causes that. It's crazy.
You just need a Yingling to, you know, wet that whistle a little bit.
To quench that thirst. All right. Where are we going from here, Trent? We're going into the court file, the alternate. Did you send us a court file?
Probably.
Okay.
I also want to say right here, this is why I feel comfortable doing this, because Ekin Car harassed the fuck out of David Lane when he was doing this in the mid-90s.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Every recent lawsuit document I've found involved with Ekin Car have been people suing Ekin Car.
Oh shit. Oh no.
So I feel comfortable enough that they don't have the free resources to talk about some guys who are just fucking around about these people.
Well, yeah. Well, don't libel them. Just, allegedly.
No, I'm just presenting information that I found.
Okay, present. Oh, by the way, it was all alleged. We don't actually think Paul Twitchell was... You know, banging dudes at the yoga center. I don't actually think that. It's humorous.
Yeah, but the rod of power is pretty suspicious.
That's real. That is real and suspicious, and we need to know why he keeps talking about his rod. But other than that, present the documents.
He had to make sure to pass the rod of power to Darwin Gross.
Here we go. This is our Fagcast Live conspiracy court. Carr, you are a judge. The court will present, or rather, the defense? Trent will now present the documents to the court.
All right. So this is a real life court document about the life of Paul Twitchell. So A, he was a loner and school bully, apparently. No sources. by the way, there's no sources on this whole thing that I found. Okay. He traveled to Haiti and learned voodoo in his late 20s and mid-30s.
That's kind of actually badass. That's on my bucket list, frankly, so.
Quote, Twitchell was taken over by a Haitian spirit which empowered him to give him the ability to project intense emotional power through others. Ooh. He later called this the Rod of Power.
Hold on.
It's another bucket list item for me, so.
Hold on.
That's in a court document.
I'm sorry. The document says that that's what he believes?
Or no, that it that's says that what that's the. What happened.
That's
so. Is that legitimately what happened? He went down to Haiti, learned voodoo, and began a religion over a rod of power.
No, I'm just concerned about the idea that the court document is stating as a fact that he was taken over by a voodoo spirit.
No, I haven't seen any evidence to support this whatsoever.
No,
I just think it's hilarious that it's in a court document.
That's crazy that it would say that in a court document. Okay, continue, I guess.
Yeah, where do we go?
It's actually as far. It just makes him look like an evil fucker, and that's basically what that did.
That's why. It gave
But we have a conspiracy theory within Ekinkar itself that I've stumbled upon here for you.
Okay.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. There is a conspiracy theory in Ekinkar that Paul Twitchell did not die of a heart attack. He was murdered.
Oh.
Okay.
Now, yep. He was murdered by a Haitian voodoo spirit.
That would be ironic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, they wanted to get his comeuppance. Comeuppance is a French word, if you didn't know that.
I'm not that cool.
Yeah, I don't know if it is, actually. It might be.
That might be claiming anything might be a French word. It should be your new shtick.
Just to sound smart. Hey, oh yes, comeuppance. It's a French word. Did you know that?
French word, I think, or it could be at any rate.
Just say it with confidence and see if you can make other people say it to other people.
No, I think you should go the other way with it and absolutely not be confident about it, and make it very clear that you have no idea.
You know,
that
could be a French word, I guess.
That could be a French word. Actually, I don't know if it is or not.
I don't know if it is, but it could be.
Actually, it's probably not.
Nothing stopping.
And then just move on.
All right, who killed him? Who killed Paul Twitchell?
Well, here, I'm going to give you some of the people who believe this. Number one is Jim Peebles, the prestigious. So he believed this when he was a part of Ekinkar. Discussed this as Jim Peebles, the guy who was in Ekinkar.
Oh, I thought you said that people think Jim Peebles killed him.
No, okay. He just, David Lane knew about this thing from his roommate who was part of Ekinkar, so he had heard it.
Oh.
But David Lane never did a lot of research into it.
Okay.
There's another guy named Alan Fieldman who we'll hopefully get into that motherfucker.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
And a woman named Patty Simpson, who actually authored a book called Paulgy, a Memoir, and was released 11 years after Paul's death.
Oh.
And she's the one who provided the story of what apparently happened.
Oh, interesting. As in the killing?
Of the poisoning, yes.
Oh, it's a poisoning. All right, do you have all three of their opinions on it, like, separately? Or these are just,
No, I do have Patty, who's the one who wrote about it.
Yeah, let's hear that one. Let's hear how he was poisoned.
Everybody prescribes to this theory. This is like the theory. There's not like a lot of theories.
This is the Ekinkar. When you go in Ekinkar, there's a sect.
This is the predominant belief.
Well, it's a conspiracy theory, Trent, right? So this is a minority belief within Ekinkar.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So if you are in the conspiracy theory side, this is the one that you believe.
Okay, because
people don't necessarily believe it.
So the mainstream view.
Harold Glemp doesn't like this.
Okay, so Harold Klemp believes that Paul Twitchell lives on forever.
Well, he died of a heart attack, but that's just translating. Regardless, whether he was poisoned or not, they think that he translated.
Oh, okay. Oh. Okay, so they all believe that he's still living, or he moved, like, whatever, that is translated.
He's living in other worlds, but, like, the way he left this world is the thing.
Was either heart attack or poisoning.
Okay, so I understand. So regardless of the conspiracy theory, people believe he lives on forever. But the question is, how did his actual physical body perish? So the mainstream story from Harold Klemp, or the mainstream story that Harold Klemp believes, is he had a heart attack and died. As we all know, heart attacks can be induced by I don't know if you'd call them poisons, but by substances. So that doesn't necessarily, rule that out. But all right, Trent, what tell me the theory.
All right, Bird, I'm gonna convince you completely that he was not poisoned.
That he was because... not poisoned. Okay.
So here's the baseline story. The people who believe that Paul Twitchell was poisoned believe that in either August or September of 1970, Paul was in Spain, which is true. We know that.
Okay.
And a young man, quote, slipped an extremely potent poison into Paul's citrus drink.
Mm. Okay, sure. He was sipping a Blue Moon.
So...
Come on, Bird.
He was sipping. He was having a what are those beers called? A Rattler. He was having a Rattler.
Yeah. Summer Shandy.
A little Summer Shandy.
Simply enjoying a nice Shandy in Spain.
He brought his Summer Shandy to Spain.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He brought his favorite Budweiser Summer Shandy. They don't make a Shandy, do they? Holy shit, what crap would that be? I forget. Sam Adams makes a shandy. He's having a little Sam Adams shandy in Spain.
Yep.
I'm gonna be honest. If you do that, you deserve to be poisoned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You bring
the hard stance. Hard stance.
You bring your shandy.
You guys mind if I pop a shandy?
Oh god, everyone is like, they're on the most beautiful beach in the world. And he's like
shandy?
And everybody's like, would you like a beautiful glass of Spanish white wine? And you go, no, I've got the shandy.
And no, it's in a can of shandy, if you don't mind.
It's a can of shandy in a Childeberg beer koozie.
That's the beer, folks.
You gotta pop a shandy. All right, so he's drinking his shandy, someone slips poison into it.
So, Patty claims, the lady who wrote the book, that he saw a doctor in bad shape in Spain. Now, here's where the whole thing derails. Do you remember when I said this happened?
1970.
August or September of 1970. Do you remember when Paul Twitchell died?
1971?
Four?
1971.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
September 17th. Of 1971.
Okay, so like a year later.
He was poisoned and then died a year later, and you have to believe that as the baseline to believe.
Oh,
in this
my God. Theory. So wait, but is the belief that he was poisoned with some slow acting poison that killed him over time, like over a year? Is that the belief, or is the belief that the records are wrong?
Well, that it was weird though, because he went.
Alan Fieldman believes that he held on.
Oh, wow.
What are the circumstances around his death is what I would want to know, because if he's going to...
We were just talking about him. He was on the beach.
No, yeah. Yeah, but he didn't die on the beach. He died a year later. So, no.
He died a year later in his home.
So he went to a doctor for a pain from a poison that gave him enough pain to go to a doctor, except... It didn't have enough to kill him for a year after. That's weird. That's like a weird poison that doesn't exist.
Those are the true facts. So.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the claim.
That's that conspiracy theory.
Who poisoned him?
A young man.
Ah.
Some young guy is all they got. So it doesn't seem incredibly realistic. So you guys probably don't want to do video stuff at all, like pull up clips.
If you want to pull up a clip for audio purposes, I could throw one in. Otherwise, you can always summarize. I'm sure we won't get much more out of the video, as you know.
Actually, so look, thinking about it, the real thing is I have videos of Harold Klemp, and I believe at my core that this man is evidence that lizard people are a thing.
Oh, really?
Okay. Like, yeah.
Like, but the weird, a lot of it is looking at him. Like, when you watch him.
Oh, yeah, man. Okay.
If you watch the video, this guy, so I'll just describe it, and you guys watch it, and whatever you pull up, if you look up Harold Klemp Ekinkar, he will be sitting on a stage in front of a large group of people.
That creepy-ass smile.
Dark blue, He will be in a dark blue suit, and he will spend the entire time in front of an audience speaking directly into the camera, like staring at you. And they do like dramatic cuts too, so there'll be like a hard cut zoom in on his face. It's terrifying.
There's like, there is 100% dudes with crazy eyes, and that is that is the dude.
This man, he's so terrifying to me.
Holy
shit. I can't.
His pupils are so dilated.
Oh. That's my one and only exhibit that he is a lizard person.
He's taking Sudafed, dude. He's doing a bunch of Sudafed. That's crazy.
I'm pulling up on my phone.
Powerful keys also, to consciousness.
He's a big fan of animals.
sure.
He actually started an offshoot, kind of like a charity, actually. I think it's a charity. I don't know. But it's called Animals Are Soul, and it's all about promoting like this, like that animals also have these spirits like people do, because it's at the, its core it's Buddhist.
Okay.
So but, like that's like his biggest thing.
Is he like a weirdo, like some kind of a PETA vegan?
All right, so there's a point in a video that I pulled up. You guys don't have to pull it up, but there is a video where he mentions something about where like TV messes with, like he can't watch TV anymore.
Oh no.
Like the signals.
The signal interrupts like his connection to the mother planet.
I haven't heard him explicitly say it, but I think that he believes or he claims that he can't be the living Eckmaster and like the TV fucks with it or something. Oh. It's weird.
He's like a neutered Eckmaster. He's like a maybe
if
like
he's watching TV.
A castrated Eckmaster in an allegorical sense, perhaps. Something like that. His balls won't drop. I mean, his ex won't drop.
The great Unix.
All right. We're going to move on from this joke because that was it. Right. That was all that was necessary. That was great.
Sure.
All right. Do we have a time limit here, or are we good to go?
We're gonna take this on Wednesday. If we can tell, Jesus. What do you guys think in the live chat?
Yeah, this is the plan. This is our new plan for the live episodes. We start them on Sunday, and we take them all the way into Wednesday, and the last hour is what we publish.
That's content. Yeah,
right. That's content. That's a lot. I'm just carrying the microphone around the house while I'm just doing stuff.
Taking a piss, you record that. Yeah. Well, all right. Maybe give us one more thing, Trent. Let's round it out, because this one I don't feel nearly as confused as I did on the last one, that's probably for the best.
This is definitely spookier too, and we're about to hit the spookiest point.
Oh, okay.
All right.
The spook apogee.
I'm going to present you guys with some points that are brought to you by IlluminatiNews.com.
Okay. That sounds like a reputable news source.
All you need to know, probably.
So this is an attempt to connect Eckankar to the Illuminati. So I'm going to present you guys with my summary of the points that I read from them.
Like, what is the Illuminati? I'm not even going to start.
Yeah, what are you thinking, man?
I mean, practically, it's the CIA, but we all know that.
We don't have until Wednesday, unfortunately.
All right, so, number one, it's noted that Darwin Gross and Harold Klemp are of direct German descent, which is important.
Oh, dear Lord.
Where's my Italian music?
That's point one. Point two is they compare it to Luciferian Freemasonry and Egyptian magic. I haven't gotten deep enough into their shit to know.
You could just tell the article writer needed to select someone to tie to the Illuminati. And he just was like Googling, all right, weird cults. And he's scrolling down the Google list and all the hyperlinks are purple. He's checked everything. And then he gets to page 38. And at the bottom, it goes, it's Eck. And he goes, I haven't checked this one yet. And he stumbles across this hapless group of morons who hew into the air and suck money out of people's wallets. And he goes,
that's really what the hewing allows you to do, is to translate money from people's wallets into your own.
and he looks at the article and he goes, oh, good. Something I can connect to, I don't know, Luciferian Freemasonry. And he just goes. So let's keep going, I guess. Now my head hurts.
All right. So this one is a much more solid connection. And Bird, I sent you guys the picture of me in front of their spiritual home, right?
You did.
All right. So since you guys have seen that, you guys will know how accurate this is. So the Chanhassen Temple, the one in Minnesota, is built on a design similar to the Lincoln Memorial, which we all know is a Masonic building, right?
Which, as we know, apparently Lincoln was a Satanist, and yeah, so that makes a lot of sense, yes.
He was a Masonic Luciferian, of course.
That's right.
So since the Lincoln Memorial is a Masonic building, and the Chanhassen building is built based on that, they connect that, but you guys saw the picture, and that does not look anything like the Lincoln Memorial.
No, it doesn't at all. Not even a little bit.
All right. Next one is referring to something called the Blue Star of the Manta, which is it's in like stained glass and on the ceiling of most of their worship places that I've seen pictures of the inside of. And it's actually in the middle, but colorless, of that world chart that I showed you guys.
Oh, okay. All right. So there's some religious symbolism there.
Star of David, which is also, if you know anything about these crazy Masonic secret society bullshits, they consider that shape to be a Masonic symbol that signifies working in this, the physical world and the spiritual world, which is all just kind of like, you know, the weird conspiracy kind of occultist stuff.
Oh God, I know several listeners right now who are going to be upset that.
Yeah, I was thinking we actually have several listeners who I think are.
I have several listeners who are way into the occult, and they'd be like, actually, it is a Masonic symbol. Oh, God. All right.
So, maybe
direct
it is.
Direct all the hate mail to Bert. You guys know what to do. Just go needle Bert in his mentions for a while.
Yeah, as you do. As you do.
As you do. As you want.
Jesus.
So the point is, the Blue Star of the Manta does not look anything like that star.
The let's see. The Blue Star of the... How do you spell it?
Mahanta.
Let's take a look. Nope, doesn't look anything like the Star of David, even a little bit. It looks much more like that. The other star. What the hell is the other star? The one that they always use to represent Baphomet. Baphomet star. What is that called?
I don't even know about that.
The sigil of Baphomet. It's a sign. All right, everybody, look up what he just said. It's a pentagram. Oh, it looks much more like a pentagram. I mean, it's not a pentagram because it doesn't have.
What is, how do you spell it?
It's six sided.
It's
right?
The blue star of the M A H A N T A, and it looks much more like a like the Baphomet pentagram than it actually does like the Star of David. Even though it has six points.
No circle around. It's like a weird like. It's like a skinny star. It's weird.
It doesn't look like
a circle around it or anything.
It's weird. It doesn't look like a shuriken. It does look like a shuriken, actually. It does.
That'd be a fucking badass shuriken, eh, Bird?
Like, maybe like a foot long.
Yeah.
Here, guys, do you guys still have access to that world's chart thing that I showed you? Because if you click on that, in the middle of the thing, like right in the middle of the page, there's a picture of it.
The Ekankar God World's Chart. Yeah, if you Google that, you will also see there's a picture of it. If you need to look it up some more, and that appears to be Paul Twitchell's face above it.
So that's where it gets Yeah, it's not good. It's not pretty.
No, he's... So, yeah, it's not.
Let's move on from there to the next connection, which I think is rock solid.
Okay.
All right, so as we all know, Field of Dreams is an Illuminati film.
Wait, Field of Dreams?
Yeah, that's an assumed for this to work.
Okay,
so.
Field of Dreams, the 1989 Kevin Costner film, what is it, a sports film? Yeah.
Yeah,
that 1989 Kevin Costner classic based on Shoeless Joe, the novel. Field of
Dreams. Obviously Illuminati propaganda, for sure. We all know that.
Sure. Because Kevin Costner's in the Illuminati? I'm confused.
So, this is important because Harold Klemp kept on quoting the movie Field of Dreams during the building of the Chanhassen Temple.
No. Why?
Oh, my God. Like, if you build it, we will come?
Yeah.
Or they will come?
So, they use that to connect this to the Illuminati.
Oh, dear God.
What? Field of Dreams, by the way, which has a 4 out of 4 stars from Roger Ebert. I don't know why. Why does everybody love this movie? It's not that good.
Oh, man.
Oh, someone is going to be needling me for that comment, too. Now that some fucking guy who's the biggest fan of Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams is going to needle my inbox for 3 weeks about this.
Needle your inbox.
All right.
Well, you guys are going to wrap this up.
I feel like at this point we should, because now I'm upset.
We're
about
to get a lot more upset.
Okay, fine.
Oh, boy, here we go.
One more, Trent.
So are you guys familiar with the Bohemian Grove?
Of course.
Yeah, sure.
Have you seen the video of the owl ritual?
Yes. Yep.
So this connection with masonry and all that bullshit. Sorry, those correct facts.
Right, right.
So that connection with owl worship is tied to, with, as far as I can tell, 3 allegories within Ekinkar's text referring to owls. So that's pretty rock solid.
Of course.
So owls are hardcore Illuminati.
Of course.
So actually, I have a question for you, Bird. How long you been an Illuminati shill using that owl on the website?
That's
a
great question.
That's a good point. I didn't think of that.
Very good point. Didn't see it going there, and I'm glad it did.
I've been meaning to bring it up for a while. You know what? Between you and Anarchy Ball saying that I'm a cryptid, you know, maybe you guys are getting closer to the secret clubhouse than you think. The secret clubhouse being my a hole in my backyard.
Can I get out of the secret clubhouse?
Yeah, can I leave now, please? No. let's wrap it up there. That was real good, Trent. I appreciate you walking us through that. That was I wish we had the audio from last time, just really at this point, to compare it to this one, because they both went in very different directions.
They did. Very different.
Very
yes.
different directions.
It's all part of one outline that I made.
Yeah, I know. Well, hopefully something happens with Ekinkar in the news so that we could get a little juicy on this. That would be good. That would be good.
Absolutely.
Trent, do you have any plugs you'd like to give us?
Not at this time. I like doing this, and I'd be willing to do more topics. I just like to have something to research for no reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Right. We'll send
if
you out on a we'll send you out on a task.
Find me on Twitter. It's at Trent's not here with the little underline at the spaces.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'll put it in the description.
There we go. Yeah. And if you have I'll research fucking anything at this point.
All right. We'll get him something. We'll get you something. Listeners, if you got any weird shit you want Trent to research, you know where to email friendsagainstgovernment@gmail.com is my song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carr, I've got something to announce, Carr, for the two of us. We've just appeared on Lines of Liberty. Check that out. Episode's coming out. Probably already came out. I heard they were releasing it on Monday. Holy Christ, was I hammered.
Should we just get the apologies out of the way?
I was balls to the wall, Carr.
We were all balls to the wall, and Howie was freaking me the hell out.
First of all, Mark was balls to the wall. Howie was balls to the wall on something else. He was drinking. I think he was having a couple beverages, and Howie. You can't. I don't think they released the video, but Howie.
No, but
I was crying at
I could not. I was like gripping my microphone, trying to like keep my mind.
I know it was absolutely brutal. Mark is like staring at his microphone. I'm like screaming into the mic because Howie's just. He keeps looking into the camera.
Well, he would know. It wasn't just that he was looking directly into the camera. He would like he had his mic. The way that he has his microphone set up is he's turned away from the computer screen and the camera,
right.
And so you would see him just gear up to get to dig into like some ridiculous story for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
He would just be facing this way, and then at the conclusion, he would say something, and you would know he was done because he would just turn and like glare.
There was a turning
all
glare.
Losing our minds.
Yeah. So you guys, I'm sure we have a huge amount of crossover with Lions of Liberty. After all, they do take a lot of their inspiration from us.
We supported them along the way too.
Yeah. So. You know, it's great that we get to pick up small podcasts and, you know, uplift them and things mm-hmm. like that. So anyway, check that episode out. Let us know what you think. And pressure them to get us on more often because that foursome. I mean, if we could have gotten Brian McWilliams and Odie in there, that would have been wild.
Yeah.
It would have been insane. So let's see if we can get that done. How many hands are on the wheel during this spooky season? Oh, week two out of the way, or I guess week. Two, yeah, week two out of the way, spooky season.
Yeah, so we're getting close to that sweet sweet candy at the end of the road here.
We certainly are. So, Carl, you want
to
sign us out?
By the way, I've been meaning to. While we're here, I've been meaning to. I guess are we going to release our Halloween episode a day late? Which
we are. We should let everybody know that. Halloween episode is coming out at midnight on Thursday. We had, you know, we're not going to release an episode on Wednesday and Thursday. You don't pay us enough to do that. Although, Secret Clubhouse members, you know, we appreciate your donations, but, you know, you got to find the clubhouse first, so.
All right. Well,
we will be releasing
on
midnight of the 31st. That we will do that.
Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah. Okay. Either way. All right. Well, until next week, keep your hands on the wheel.
Squaw!
You.
Oh, yeah, we got a hue. We got a hue. No, I'm not done recording. Let's do it all at once. Three, two, one.
You.
There we go, gents. Good job. All right, we'll catch you next time.
Perfect.